next case of the morning, which is Dunlap v. Hepp.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Brian Fall. I'm with the Federal Defender Services of Wisconsin. I'm here today on behalf of Charles Dunlap. The issue today is whether the application of the Wisconsin Rape Shield Statute was a violation of Mr. Dunlap's Sixth Amendment right to present a defense and his right to confrontation. At trial, Dunlap's counsel addressed the issue of the victim's credibility. In response to that, the state prosecutor began questioning the Child Protective Services investigator about the victim's responses and her actions after the alleged incident. The purpose of this was twofold. First, to try to reestablish the credibility of the victim, and also to leave an inference that if she was exhibiting signs consistent with sexual abuse after the incident with Dunlap, Dunlap must have been the person who abused her. Dunlap's trial counsel initially objected to some of the questions raised by the defense, but then in response wanted to rely upon a earlier report by this Child Protective Service investigator in which there was information that the victim was exhibiting signs of sexual abuse prior to the alleged incident by Dunlap. That information was not allowed into trial under the Wisconsin Rape Shield law. Dunlap appealed. The Wisconsin Court of Appeals agreed with Dunlap that his confrontation right under the Sixth Amendment was violated and remanded for a new trial. However, the Wisconsin Supreme Court reversed that and found that Dunlap's Sixth Amendment right to confrontation was not violated. Dunlap contends that the Wisconsin Supreme Court's decision is an unreasonable application of Supreme Court precedent. Now, the two seminal cases, Supreme Court cases, are Davis versus Alaska and Chambers versus Mississippi. Neither of those cases are rape shield statutes, but they say that a defendant has a right to confront his accusers. In Davis, it was the defense wanted to challenge a witness about prior juvenile convictions, and it would have attacked or seriously lessened the credibility of this witness, who was really the only witness against the defendant. So the Supreme Court said, because it's so crucial, you should be allowed to address this prior conviction at a trial. And Chambers versus Mississippi is not quite as relevant here, because even though in that case they said that a Mississippi statute that disallowed a procedural statute, this procedural evidentiary statute, disallowed you from questioning your own witness under the voucher rule. That case isn't important because there was a witness who had actually admitted, other than the defendant, who admitted to the crime in three separate instances. So that might be an extreme case. This court, in three cases, has applied those holdings of Davis and Chambers to rape shield statutes. Those are Stevens v. Miller, Hammer v. Carlin, and Pack v. Page. Each of those cases found there was no confrontation clause violation. Mr. Dunlap's case, I contend, is different in several respects from each of those cases. With respect to Stevens, in Stevens there was an attempted rape, and the defendant wanted to testify that during a consensual sexual encounter, he said specific things that then enraged the victim and then might be reasons why she was bringing the rape charge. Well, in that case, the defendant was allowed to testify that he said things that angered her. The trial judge did not allow her to get into specifics because he thought those were just insightful and were only be used to embarrass the victim. That's not the case here. The purpose of Dunlap's, the questions of Dunlap's attorney was to establish not that she did something bad, but that she exhibited signs prior to the alleged incident with Dunlap. In Hammer versus Carlin...
That is to say somebody else had abused her before he got to it.
Correct.
Is that it? Before he got to her?
Well, he contends that he didn't do it.
Well,
but
yeah,
I mean that
obviously, no matter what she did, if he did what he's convicted of, that's no excuse.
Right. No, he contends he is innocent.
Right.
That he didn't do anything. His testimony in trial was that he was babysitting. She went to bed. She came out once or twice. He told her to settle down and go back, and that was it. The inference that was left with the jury from the state prosecutor's questioning was that there was a sexual abuse and that it was conducted by Dunlap. And he was not allowed to enter any kind of testimony that would erase that inference from the jury. Now, he wanted to... The kind of facts that he wanted to elicit, some of them were... There was inappropriate sexual behavior.
We know. We've read it.
Okay. I can, in some instances, you can understand that perhaps, kind of like in Stevens, maybe they could have limited the tone somewhat, but he should have at least been able to ask if there was any prior incidents. I mean, at least that fact, and perhaps even more to what they involved, whether it was just talking or sexual incidents with other adults, something like that. In Hammer versus Carlin, there you had a sexual assault, but as this court noted, the argument was based on only a conclusory argument that the evidence was critical to his case. He never really, that argument was never developed, and in fact that the argument kind of came along on the appeal level and was never brought to the state court. And that seems to be the reasoning behind the denial there of the Confrontation Clause violation, because this wasn't really raised in the state court. And then in Pack versus Page, there the defense counsel at trial wanted to use a prior report of sexual abuse to show that a second might be untruthful, a second report of sexual abuse. I'm not quite sure how that works, and I think this court was kind of confused by it too. And
we're never confused.
Okay. But it said that the defendant failed to produce any evidence that the earlier report was false. So in this case, again, we have a Wisconsin Child Protective Service investigator who had information in a report that she wrote that says that there was evidence of a prior sexual abuse, and that there were concerns from a friend of the victim's parents that her daughter was engaging in inappropriate behavior, and they didn't want her son to be around him.
You're running into your rebuttal.
Right. Could I save the rest of my time?
Ms. Mueller?
Actually, you can lower that thing. There's a button down there someplace.
There we go.
Yeah, that away. Now you got to stop it again.
Stop it.
Boom, boom. Ah, perfect.
Assistant Attorney General Marguerite Mueller, representing the respondent Randy Hepp. The Wisconsin Supreme Court reasonably applied both Chambers versus Mississippi and Davis versus Alaska when it upheld the trial court's exclusion of evidence that the 6-year-old victim, Jamie, had exhibited signs of precocious or bizarre sexual behavior prior to the charged assault by Dunlap. The Wisconsin Supreme Court's application of federal precedent was reasonable because that court gave earnest consideration to the possibility that Wisconsin's rape shield law, under some circumstances, will have to yield to a defendant's constitutional right to present a defense. The Wisconsin Supreme Court recognized that principle as early as 1990 in State versus Pulitzano. And in deciding whether Dunlap's constitutional rights were violated, the Wisconsin Supreme Court applied the test it had devised in Pulitzano, which in turn was based on Chambers and Davis versus Alaska, to determine whether the exclusion of evidence violated his rights. There are several reasons why this case is easily distinguishable from Davis versus Alaska and Chambers versus Mississippi, but most importantly, it's the nature of the excluded evidence and the role it would have played in the defense to the charges. In both Davis and Chambers, the evidence that was excluded was critical to the defendant's defense. Here, all that the evidence would have shown was that sometime prior to the assault, charged assault, Jamie exhibited these forms of sexual behavior that the defense expert, Dr. Daniels, in his report indicated could be based on three different occurrences. One, the child could have been exposed to pornography. Two, she could have been the victim of sexual abuse at an earlier time. And three, she could have witnessed others engaging in sexual behavior. So it wasn't even clear here that this girl was the victim of abuse on a prior occasion. That was just one of three inferences that Dr. Daniels indicated could be drawn. Secondly, even if the jury had heard this kind of evidence, it would not have gone to explain at all why Jamie accused Dunlap of being the one to have sexually assaulted her. The type of sexual assault charged here was very different in kind from the kind of behavior that the child had exhibited on prior occasions. But
there was another person in this apartment who said that he was falsely accused of abusing her.
There was some indication in the record that Gary Cox, who yeah. Dunlap was living with at the time, would have testified that Jamie had falsely accused him of sexual assault and that the motivation was she was angry at him for not protecting her from Charles Dunlap. That the admissibility of that testimony is not before the court today. But that was something that was on the record in terms of pretrial hearings. So not only is the evidence that was proffered here really not critical to the defense, it really would not have helped.
You were saying about the different possibilities, different views of that cross-examination evidence had it been admitted. One, you said, was that she was a victim of sexual assault at a prior occasion.
That was one possibility.
And those possibilities were raised by whom?
Dr. Daniels, in his report that was submitted on behalf of the defense in conjunction with their post-trial motion, it was long after trial, Dr. Daniels had done this report for Dunlap and had indicated that the frequency with which this girl exhibited sexual behavior could be attributed to three causes. He really couldn't say. Mm. And one of the causes was a prior abuse. One was exposure to pornography, and one was exposure to watching others engage in sexual conduct. That he just could not say what the source was. In light of the fact that the right to confrontation is not absolute, Dunlap and any other petitioner who's claiming that a state court unreasonably applied cases like Chambers or like Davis is facing really an uphill battle, because this is not a situation such as occurred in either Chambers or Davis where the state court just looked at a state statute and said, you can't get this evidence in, end of the story. That's not what the Wisconsin Supreme Court did here. The court recognized that, yes, sometimes our rape shield statute does have to yield. However, this is not one of those instances. And as this court has indicated in cases like Pack versus Page, Hammer versus Carlin, and Stevens versus Miller, usually if a state court gives earnest consideration to the possibility of a constitutional violation in applying a state's rape shield law, that is enough to pass muster under 2254 sub 1D. So if the court has no further questions, I would like to rely on our brief for the rest of my argument.
Okay,
Thank you.
Mr. Fall.
Okay, I'd just like to address a couple things. First, the Polizano test, the state court test. Dunlap contends that that's unreasonable for two reasons. First, as Davis and Chambers indicate, and this as this court has said in Stevens, that this is really a case-by-case kind of analysis. And Polizano, with its five-part test, seems to be a bright-line kind of test that isn't as malleable as it should be in these circumstances. The other part is in the way the Supreme Court used the Polizano test. They used it incorrectly or unreasonable in this case. The reason is they tried to compare the victim's actions with Dunlap's prior alleged assault. I think the state court of appeals got it right. The question is, it should be compared to other instances of that are indicative of prior sexual abuse, like other indicators of that, is what it should have been compared with. I think the Supreme Court, Wisconsin Supreme Court, got that wrong. As far as it being crucial evidence, the jury was left with the inference, I'm just about out of time here,
cool,
that
finish up.
Dunlap, that she was sexually abused, and the only possible instance, only possible perpetrator of that is Dunlap, and therefore was crucial to his defense to offer some other alternative theory, and he wasn't allowed to do that in violation of the Sixth Amendment rights.
Okay, thanks. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.
You're appointed too, aren't you? Good job. Thank you.
Proceed to the last case of the morning.